Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind the Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Here we are, 20K post-wrestling.
We did it. Even after you called everybody pieces of shit if they didn't
Only
subscribe.
If you didn't subscribe. I'm not calling the 20,059 that. They were great people.
Everybody, clearly the threat worked because we did surpass 20,000 subs. Thank you, everybody, who might be watching us or at least maybe subscribe to youtube.com/post-wrestling. Taking us about 8 years to get to this point, so it was not an easy path for us, all right? But we're very happy, very, very happy with the way the channel has grown up until this point. You know, the YouTube algorithm increasingly does not necessarily reward the type of content that we produce. Long form, maybe without...
Capitalize words in our titles. We don't...
Not all.
We haven't done the annoying...
I think we should.
Yeah.
Maybe for this one, just to celebrate. We've been extremely happy with the way the channel has performed and the amount of sort of like stuff we've been producing. And we want to thank everybody for supporting it.
Way got us here. I've ridden his coattails and he's gotten us to 20K. So thank you. Thank you, Wei Ting. As a thank you, we are dropping the post profile, the story of Hulk Hogan, which... Part of me thought of extending based on our news discussion. Wow. About Brooke. That story has not ended. But so this is a audio version of the 16,000-word story I did on Hulk Hogan. The audio version, chock full of clips throughout his career, the scandals, the controversies, a couple rare interviews that I conducted with the man over the years, all of that. It's currently up for our cafe members. We're going to drop it in the podcast feed on Thursday. There will be a YouTube version. The YouTube version will not have the clips in them because we do not want to get struck down by the YouTube gods. So blame YouTube, okay? We are giving people the option. Subscribe on the podcast feed if you want the full version.
Timestamps, though, for the YouTube version. So maybe what you sacrifice with hearing clips, you do get in the form of, I guess, some convenience. But we do recommend listening to it in audio form on the podcast side of things where things are a bit more of a sort of a lenient.
Still the Wild West.
Yeah. But John did a whole lot of great work, first of all, writing this entire document, voicing it, and then finding clips to support the entire thing. So it reads as a very, almost like a audio documentary on the story and the life of Hulk Hogan put together by John Pollock. So set aside, 100 minutes for this?
About that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Roughly. Also on Thursday, we're going to be dropping the next Rewind Away, the long-awaited Rewind Away. This one we had to delay because of the passing of Terry Bollea. So the best of the WWF Volume 16, this is the one you've been waiting for, okay? I promise you, this is not going to be a run-of-the-mill review. This is one of the more insane WWF VHS releases of its day. From 1988, going to many countries, we're going to get Tatsumi Fujinami, we're going to get the Jumping Bomb Angels, we're going to get Bull Nakano, and we're going to get Mean Gene Okerlund heading down the streets of Tokyo and interacting with Japanese citizens who will not be able to convey how offended they are.
You think ESPN made an exception and requested this to be a part of their new streaming service?
You know what? I could see Stephen A. Smith taking over the reins of the best of the WWF series, and maybe he will take the reins from Mean Gene.
Interesting. All right. I look forward to finally talking about this.
Yes, we will sit down and chat with that. And then new G1 show will be out on Thursday with Eric Marcotte and Kate from Montreal. Way is up with SmackDown on Friday with our man Neil. And then it's John Pollock making a special. I've been invited by Kate from Montreal to join her for Collision Course this Saturday night. So you have your whole weekend scheduled. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6. It gets you in the door.
Hey, let's not forget, we just did our first review of WWE Unreal for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. Of course, we are also going to give this very first episode away for free on Friday. So look for this in your free feeds on Friday. But those of you that are already cafe patrons, look for it right now in your feeds. Spent an hour talking about episode one. We will be releasing a new episode review every single week on Tuesday. So look for that in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Yes. All right. It is time to get to Dynamite, where they are out of Chicago and into Cleveland, Ohio at the Wolstein Center. And a final number from WrestleTix coming in at just under 3,000 for the evening. And we're starting off with an MJF promo, and he is joined by the CMLL World Light Heavyweight Championship that he won on Friday night at Arena Mexico, and addresses mascot Mark Briscoe and says he's going to send him to hell because he's the devil. Mark, you were put on earth to be a loser and a blue-collar bitch, and you're not championship material. You're white trash that got lucky. The fans pity you. That's why they cheer you, and that luck runs out tonight. So setting the stage for our main event. But immediately, it's to the ring for Jon Moxley and Speedball Mike Bailey, who kicked things off with a pretty hot atmosphere here in Cleveland. And you had Jon Moxley give everything in the world to Speedball Mike Bailey. He got the heat poking Bailey in the eyes, and Bailey is blinded on the floor as Marina Shafir looms over him and then sweeps him. Kevin Knight gets down right into Moxley's face, which would be a setup for a match that they're going to come back with. Moxley was manipulating the fingers of Bailey. Bailey comes back, hits his moonsault, double knees, triangle moonsault to the floor. And then Yuta shows up, grabbing Bailey from the floor, and gets booted by Moxley. As Shafir distracts the referee, Darby appears through the crowd. This place goes nuts as he snatches Yuta and drags him away. This continues to distract Moxley, and Bailey goes for a sunset flip. This crowd went nuts. They totally bought that this was going to catch Jon Moxley. I thought it was a tremendous near fall. Tornado kick into the armbar. Crowd is now all believing that Bailey might actually win this match, which was amazing. Moxley escapes, gets to the choke, and then finally a death rider right on the crown of his head. 14 minutes, 15 seconds as Moxley and Shafir run through the crowd searching for Yuta, as Moxley on his way out, like he's not even moving his limp arm, selling the armbar spot from Mike Bailey. But in terms of a match that you knew Bailey was not winning, I mean, Moxley made every person in this crowd try to believe that the upset may be happening.
I thought it was a great little match here. I thought Mox was awesome. So ferocious in everything he does. I think Bailey is almost like, he's great all the time from an athletic standpoint, but I think seeing him here basically fend for his life against this monster and Jon Moxley, I thought made his babyface appeal and his comebacks that much more captivating than usual. Great action, great heel work, great near falls. Even, you know, what is essentially a bit of a cold match, I thought was really, really hot just watching this action and listening to this crowd.
Yeah, this match, I can't remember how close to Dynamite that they announced this on social media. It was like right up until Dynamite was starting. And this is like, that is Tony Khan's belief, that these late announcements are the most, get the most engagement. I don't know if it's the best tact to take, but he believes in it. And that's why you got these announcements. Like, I don't think many people knew you were getting this match till you tuned in tonight.
Well, okay. So they did announce Kevin Knight versus Jon Moxley for next week. Does it change anything about your anticipation for the match compared to maybe this one?
You've thrown all that social engagement out the window. Instead, I'm going to have to think about this match for a week. I'm going to anticipate it. I mean, I guess, when we go back, I'm not saying like everything needs to be announced well in advance. But I did feel that, like, the early days of Dynamite, especially like year one, like, I found that to be a really effective way of just, here are your 3-4 matches, and you have a week to just let them simmer. You can promote them on social media. You can build them up over the week. But just announcing a match, like, it's great if that sounds appealing to you. But to me, like, the art of promoting a match is you announce it, and then you give people a reason to want to see this match on top of it. So you weren't going to do that with this one. But I'm just saying, from a general sense, I think that it's... one that I don't know how valuable the, you know, the social media buzz is that you get by announcing a match, you know, 20 minutes beforehand.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe they shouldn't announce it at all. Like, oftentimes on WWE TV, for instance, half the card, we have no idea. The matches are made by the GM during the show.
Renee was backstage. How many interviews did Renee conduct on this show?
I think 100? About five. Yeah, I was going to say about 500, but yeah.
She's with Alex Windsor and Timeless Toni Storm. Toni just explains, it's a non-sexual relationship and you can't beat us off. Windsor tries to get things back on track by saying, you can't give her a lick without me giving a lick back, and then realized she's fallen into the Toni Storm trap. I'm sorry, this was much closer to... we're going to kick your A word. That's what I felt like.
This is much better. I mean, much better than that, I think. I'm suspecting that, like, the post All In program might have been some sort of team up between Toni Storm and Amina Shirakawa. And it very much feels to me like an Alex Windsor might be suddenly just kind of put into this position as Toni Storm's best friend as some sort of, like, you know, substitute for now.
Just call me Mina. Why don't you?
But I think she's been really great, like, in this sort of role. I mean, I do wish the sort of introduction to her might have felt a bit more substantial, but maybe they were handcuffed in that department because of the Mina injury. But just seeing the chemistry that these two have on screen, even in a little interaction like this, I certainly think it's there. I'm taking, like, an immediate liking to them, and I've been very impressed with Windsor, both in-ring but also in her ability to talk and to perform as a scene partner for a Toni Storm here.
Moxley and Shafir are outside the building, and Yuta has been placed into a body bag, and Darby is about to drive over him. He's about to murder this guy when Moxley and Shafir drag him out of the way of Darby in the vehicle, and they open the body bag, and a Forbidden Door sign has been stapled to his head. I don't know why I thought of this, but, like, Adam Copeland has been given a restraining order because of, like, spearing people, and this Warner Brothers Discovery, they are okay with this. Should this guy not have a restraining order? He nearly killed a guy on your air.
Depends if it's requested by the victim here.
I guess so. Maybe Yuta should be looking into that. But I guess this is as close to a confirmation of the singles match for Forbidden Door.
With Darby and Mox, not Darby and Yuta.
No, I think Yuta will be hung above the ring.
Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. Mercedes arrives in a limo earlier today with her eight belts, as Renee calls All in Texas, her match with Storm, the best women's match in history. Greatest of all time, this match. Monet just calls her a mark and walks away. And she has a lot of title belts. Eight of them.
Yeah. I like this, like, very sort of like less is more approach to Mercedes Moné's promos. Like, her coming out, like, on this show, she didn't really talk at all. And she called Renee a mark and then came out, did some physicality afterwards. And that actually really helps her presentation. I mean, like, when it's right, you know, I want to hear her speak a bit more. But honestly, I think you can maintain this image of, like, this sort of, like, larger-than-life type of personality by her doing less talking.
I do like the fact that they are keeping this Storm Monet match as, like, this classic match. And I think it's very important to, like, select your big matches that you want to, like, assign that to. So whenever that rematch happens, like, you've built it up as, like, this historic meeting that you can go back to at some point down the road. And it was an excellent match. Like, you should mm-hmm. make your matches feel like a big deal after the fact. So Mercedes is going to defend the TBS title at Forbidden Door in a four-way interpromotional match with a member of AEW, CMLL, and Stardom, with the four-way next to determine who will represent AEW, as Alex Windsor takes on Queen Aminata, Sky Blue, and Billy Starks. But the place erupts as Toni Storm comes out, and Athena is upset that Storm is here, so Toni was just ringside for the match in Windsor's corner. Early on, Queen Aminata delivers chocolate kisses to Alex Windsor, and then we see the lightest Hurricane Rana by Sky Blue. I mean, I thought she was just going to fly into the ether with the way her legs were around Windsor here. Blue hits a swinging neckbreaker off of the apron onto Queen Aminata, and then the women are on the floor. Starks is on the top and just dives off the top, but this was the special camera totally missed it. So you just see a body just come out of nowhere into this whole train wreck on the floor. And we get a double head scissors with Starks on one side and Windsor turning over all three in a Boston crab with the four women all involved here. Then Starks and Windsor, they totally messed up this snapmare spot. And then there's a pop-up powerbomb by Windsor. A sharpshooter is applied by Windsor. That gets broken up. All four go down from headbutts. And we get the code blue off the top onto Alex Windsor. Queen Aminata breaks that up. So Billy Starks then tries to break up a cover with a swanton. And she has to cover so much distance. She was not exactly Leon Slater here, clearing three quarters of the ring. She, like, her legs landed on blue and This did end the cover. But then we go to the floor, and Sky Blue goes for a code blue to Queen Aminata. And she had to think, I just hit one of these off the turnbuckle. This is going to be no problem. She slides off of Queen Aminata's back like it was going down a slip and slide, okay? She slides off her back, and there's a chair right there that she's obviously to land on. And so she just propels herself into this chair and smacks it with her hand. And Queen Aminata just turns around and lifts her up and just drives her through this chair. Yeah, I didn't know what happened here, but this was like the worst angle. Like, maybe she thought the camera wasn't on her. This could not have looked worse.
It was terrible. Yeah. It was made worse because you're essentially seeing a close up of this with the camera on the floor and them right in front of it, right? So, I mean, obviously she was supposed to miss the code red. I don't know if Aminata just miscommunicated or what, but something was fucked up here, and it looked awful because Blue essentially put herself into the chair, and it looked pretty bad. Yeah.
So from there, Storm would end up yanking Athena from entering the ring. She gets the biggest pop of the whole match. Like, Storm just kind of, like, she was the star to everyone, and rightfully so. Windsor counters a suplex, small package, pins Billy Starks in 11 minutes and 29 seconds. I thought this match was just way too, whether you want to say too overbooked or whatnot, it's just the fact there was so much stuff that missed. There was stuff that hit, but there was a ton of stuff that was just off in here, kind of the highlight or low light, rather, being the chair spot. But I thought a lot of this was like a mess at various points.
These are like, the standard is very high for, you know, the AEW women's mid card. And I think there's a lot of there's a lot of pace, there's a lot of activity and a lot of cool spots that I think are expected of these women in these sort of multi-person matches. And the
these are these very elaborate sequences and spots that are all like set up, and sometimes they hit and sometimes they miss. And that this was one where like there was plenty of misses here. It just felt to me like there was just so much that they were trying to get in. And yeah, if you execute it, it gets off. Like that's the expectation. It's like kind of high risk, high reward. If all this stuff hits, hopefully the crowd goes wild. And that's the level that these audiences are kind of expecting these matches to be.
For me, like the blue, the code blue on the floor was like a big botch that like really did take me out of the match. But for me, for the most part, I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed the action. I enjoyed the effort at creativity.
It definitely had this almost like car wreck like mentality where like the crowd was like into this, and the announcers are just like, man, this is like they're just watching this, and like you're watching this, and there's just several instances where I'm like, if there's someone that doesn't get injured in this match, it will be a miracle, because it just felt like it was like nonstop of everyone just throwing everything at one another. Like there was a certain appeal of that this audience, they were certainly not sitting on their hands for this match by any stretch.
Yeah, because I thought the action was consistent enough. And like when I'm watching wrestling, I guess I like, to me, not like even that senton that landed like very Jeff Hardy style, you know, like full weight on the person. I that doesn't bother me, because that could very well happen in a real match, right? So not every move has to look like perfect textbook, but there are instances that break my immersion, and that code blue was one of them, unfortunately.
So Monet comes out afterwards wearing all her belts, and it's just insane. She passes them one by one to Aubrey Edwards, who can barely hold them up, and then she remains with the TBS title to hold it up in front of Windsor. Storm enters the ring, and Athena sneaks up to the top and nails her with the O-face from behind as Athena hits a backstabber to Windsor, and we get Monet and Athena locking eyes and the announcers stating a temporary alliance between these two as they go into their respective matches at Forbidden Door.
I like it a lot. Yeah, a team of Monet and Athena. Taking on presumably Windsor and Storm. I mean, kind of makes perfect sense with those two being the matches heading into Forbidden Door, at least Windsor being one of four participants in the match with Monet. So I'm enjoying all of this. It's making a lot of sense.
Then we go, and I will note, because I rewound to check this, it did label this earlier today. Renee is with the Young Bucks, and they confront the production guy about their entrances these last couple of weeks. They want pyro. They want an LED screen. And they hand over a written note for Justin Roberts with instructions on how they are to be introduced tonight. And Renee is just talking about, man, check out our hot new tag team, Brodito, tonight, just dismissing the Young Bucks. And then she throws it back to Renee in the ring.
She said back to you guys, I'm assuming. Is that what the throw was?
The camera goes from her to her, and it was just man, we needed a commercial or something here. But
agreed. Like
they did again, label it earlier today, so I did double check that. It's not as though
but it does still appear awkward in a production.
It totally, you know, is like just jarring.
Like, yeah, some element, maybe an on-camera to, like, what is it, you know, Excalibur and Taz, you know, before cutting back to Renee, probably be a bit more of a, I don't know, a seamless transition, something like this.
Or just have Alicia do the Young Bucks interview.
They use Renee a lot.
She's, and like, Alicia did a lot of interviews too. Like, there were just a lot of interviews on this show. A
lot more
them.
Than usual.
Yes.
Like, I'm sensing that. And video packages as well, you know.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be criticism for that. There's going to be people that are happy about it. I did feel, I don't know, like to one person it might be too much, to another person it might be perfectly fine.
Well, Renee brings out Kyle Fletcher and the Don Callis family. They replay the attack on Dustin, and Callis says that Kyle probably retired Dustin, just like Okada sent Omega to the scrap heap. And Kyle states how Dustin stole his moment at All In, aged Dustin by 4 years, saying he's a 60-year-old man, and he also takes credit for putting Adam Cole on the shelf. And the way he just paused when he said this, I think he was expecting a much more heated reaction from the crowd, that he was going to take a shot at Adam Cole. And it wasn't really that reaction from this crowd. But he says that he's going to become the greatest of all time. And Don Callis has once again, he's commissioned an oil painting as Mel Coleman continues to get her work showing on broadcast television.
Is this the actual artist?
Yes, who they've used for all of these. She's done all of these oil paintings in the past. Oh. And they reveal this oil painting of Don Callis just looking, I don't even know how to describe this, with a nude Kyle Fletcher with the TNT title covering his balls. Is this going to be a t-shirt?
Describe it.
Yeah.
It already is.
Is it?
Yeah. If you follow Mel Coleman on Twitter, which I am just now, you can see it's now available at shop.aew.com.
Of course it is. Of course it
so
is.
So you can yourself buy a Don Callis.
Will we ever see that shirt out in the wild? Will we ever see someone wearing this out there?
Will we? Are you kidding me? Of course. I can imagine Braden or Davey purchasing one right now.
Okay.
The low price of $24.99.
It was a very good promo from Kyle Fletcher, I thought.
Oh, excellent. Honestly, like, I mean, this was probably the segment we were supposed to get after All In if he had beaten Adam Cole. And what, like, now that we're like a few weeks delayed from it, he doesn't lose a thing.
I think he gained. Think he's having
absolutely
like, that match with Dustin on Thursday was just it was incredible. And
there's more heat on him after like I mean the real heartbreak of Adam Cole, which you can actually attribute to Kyle Fletcher, and he should be taking credit for it in storyline. Now he's also presumably ended the career of Dustin Rhodes.
Now the career killer. Yeah.
I very much feel like, and it's not just the shaved head, but like he feels very much like he's in his Randy Orton legend killer phase, you know, just in terms of just confidence, in terms of just like how much you could see him as a real future main eventer. Like Kyle is it, man. Like he's, you know, probably a year or two away from winning that world championship and possibly being the top heel of the entire company. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Alicia interviews Adam Copeland, who says that Christian showed no remorse last week, but my hands are too full anyway with FTR right now and Stokely. So he announces he is facing Stokely next week, and FTR can either violate the restraining order. And by doing so, it makes it null and void if they run in to save Stokely, or they can honor the restraining order and Stokely can get destroyed. So, I mean, at least they're making this something to progress this story a little further.
Yeah, I think it's clever.
Sure.
He's using.
Is this how restraining orders work, though?
What do you mean?
Like, if you got a restraining order against me and...
if you violated, is it null and void?
And then you attacked me. Then the restraining order is null and void, and we can just beat the hell out of each other. Is that how they work?
I've never had one, so oh, I guess okay. I'm not really sure. But yeah, so I mean, he did mention Christian here. They're obviously at the moment delaying that because they each have their own programs going on with FTR and also the Matriarchy.
Brodito against the Young Bucks. So we talked about, man, the Young Bucks, they're going to have to keep like upping these entrances and like how far can you go. I'm gonna say the same thing after this one, because this entrance, first of all, the screen doesn't raise for them at the entrance, so they have to crawl under the screen to make it out into the arena. Then Justin Roberts reads the instructions verbatim as we get the saddest pyro that just limply goes over the screen. And then the Chiron comes up to read Max and Jeremy. And we've got their screen just features Swerve and Ospreay beating them at All In with this terrible font. Then their music goes into this horrible instrumental as the crowd is chanting jobbers. This was tremendous. I thought that and this got so over with the crowd. I mean, it was great. Like, this was even better than last week's, and they have to keep trying to come up with new ways, and I don't know what they're going to keep coming up with, because they threw a bunch of ideas all into this one.
Oh, I love it. Like, everything from, you know, the online posters, just abusing Comic Sans, and just the gaudiest imagery imaginable, to this Generation Me reference. I love this. It's certainly a lot more fun than I think whatever they were attempting with the EVPs. And it's the type of, like, humor that I think, like, they kind of made their names with BTE. And it's made them a lot more entertaining to watch as heels.
So I think this was during Picture in Picture, but Taz explains he doesn't like the J word. Nothing about the A word, but doesn't like the J word. And then says, I broke in the late 80s. We should be using that word. And Excalibur says, well, there were a lot of words that were used in the late 80s that you shouldn't be using now. And
I'm sure Taz has had a podcast rant about the use of the word jobber, I'm sure.
So Matt tries for more bang for your buck, but Brody just collapses on his back. But they come back. They hesitate on the EVP trigger because they have to figure out the new name for it. And when they say Young Bucks trigger, it's too late, and Bandido ducks, so they collide knees.
I love that the meeting, like, they had a little mini meeting as they were both, like, pausing the EVP trigger.
Yes.
In order to decide the name. Great.
And then, in this incredible spot, the Bucks are on the floor, and Brody, this is kind of like the deal they did with the LWO with Joaquin Wilde, but different, where King helps launch Bandido off the second rope for this gigantic flip over the top. He got such height on this thing and came down. It looks spectacular. Then they try their monkey flip 450, where they won their first round match, but it misses, and then there's a destroyer to Bandido. Swanton, they do the Swanton deal, the Bucks do, but Bandido, after he got this incredible leap off this flip off the second rope, he gets no bounce for this into the sit-out powerbomb. Just did not come off the rope at all, so they could not finish the sit-out powerbomb. Brody King then is to catch Matt on his shoulders on the apron. He nearly drops this guy, and he just powers him back up to hit this DVT. It was an incredible amount of strength here to save this spot. Nick and Bandido then fight on the barricade, and Nick runs into a military press off the barricade. Matt survives a 21-plex after Nick breaks up the cover. There's a fall-away moonsault. Matt kicks out, and then with Nick on the floor, Matt gets hit by the monkey flip into the 450, which I guess is now their finisher, and they pin him in 20 minutes and 26 seconds. Crowd really enjoyed this, and as much as it was like a lot of like great moves and like that aspect, they're just so into these Bucks characters now, and it got like a lot of chants throughout, and Brody just elicited the chants that much more. He was finding a Young Bucks or jobber sign to really build it up as well. So like these characters are very much working for the Bucks.
Yeah, awesome match, as you would expect. But now with like the sort of added element of like these fun, you know, like non-EVP Young Bucks characters. Of course, it had everything you would expect from a Bucks match, with lots of really impressive spots and tag partners in Brodito that are like really, really catching on and putting a whole lot of effort in creating creative double team maneuvers. I thought many of them were actually maybe on the verge of failing, but they eventually just saved and got them all, and that kind of made the matches a bit more compelling.
It added like this struggle to it, because this was not like your Bucks match where you watch all this stuff and it's just like 100% precision. Like, yeah, there was stuff that was like they were some stuff that just was off, or there was like a struggle behind it, and it was like just rescuing some of these things too.
Yeah, it didn't really have the fluidity of like the highest quality Bucks matches, but I kind of found it almost like more ambitious and sometimes more impressive than a lot of the others as well. I'm looking forward to the FTR Brodito match because I think that match will be very different from this one. That one will, I mean, will probably be spectacular in its own way, but I think there will be a bit more emphasis on heat building and not as much on the flashy offense, which I mean, I fully wanted from this particular match.
And we go backstage to FTR, who are interviewed, and they address Copeland and state, "We got the restraining order for your safety so that your kids can grow up with you." So a lot of threatened death on this show, and they are not responsible for what Big Stoke is going to do to you next week. So Stokely cuts a promo on Copeland that he's a bully, and you're going to have to tell your family that you got beat by Big Stoke.
So they called Beth, or she said, they said, "Your wife has the head of a micro brawler."
A micro brawler, yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, he's coming for blood next week, I guess.
Yeah. Hurt Syndicate segment? Prior to this?
Oh, yes, of course. My usual fault. Renee is with the Hurt Syndicate, and they congratulate Brodito, and, they wish the final two teams well, because they're going to lose to the Hurt Syndicate. MJF enters, and Lashley and Shelton immediately walk away and says that, "MVP, we need each other. We don't need Lashley and Benjamin." And MVP explains that, "You're always focused on yourself, not the team. Your ego is more than anyone can stand." And that's me talking. So MVP is the third one to put the thumbs down and says, "We're going to leave you in one piece to go after the championship, but I hope you fail, because if you win, Bobby is coming for you, and it won't be business. It'll be very personal."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Continuing this breakup, I think I'm still on the side of thinking this is an elaborate ruse. Maybe a ruse of the century.
How about this Hurt Syndicate office that also looks to have doubled like a shower? Like, it had a couch, but that's the only definable trait that would call this an office.
I mean, these are just empty rooms in these buildings, aren't they?
Yeah, this is the Wolstein Center office. Then we go to an Okada Swerve video, and Swerve comes out and is interviewed by Renee, and she talks about how big this match is and what a big match wrestler Okada is, the best in the world. And she mentions, "Are you worried about the Don Callis family in all of this?" And Swerve is like, "No, because they're not allowed to be ringside according to the unified title rules." It's like, okay, well then there you have it. He says that Okada is a wrestler that is a once in a generation performer, but I'm someone that no one has ever seen before or will ever see again. I put the fear of God into Okada when I looked at him. This is a big match for Okada because he's facing the most dangerous man in AEW, and I lost two of the biggest matches of my career in London, so I need this win for my legacy. A very good promo, a little kind of on the nose with your Tony Storm lead up to London as well, but I like this. They're really making this feel like a threat to Okada, and you know, at this point, this is like the biggest match on the card so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, MJF and Hangman, I think, might have taken that over for now. And then whatever Ospreay has going on for him. But it is one of the co-headliners for sure. Yeah.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. Renee interviews Queen, or it's Alicia with Mark Briscoe. God, dude, there were a lot of interviews on this show as I'm just scanning through here. So Alicia's with Mark Briscoe. He says, "Tonight, MJF is going to pay for his sins." Paige walks in. "He always looked up to the Briscoes, but over these last few years, I've really admired the man you've been, and I hope that you are next in line if you win tonight." So he wishes Mark luck. Renee interviews Queen Aminata. She's disappointed about her loss. Willow comes in. Chris Statlander confronts them. Well, doesn't confront, but just comes in and throws confetti and leaves.
I did not get Chris Statlander in this at all. Like, since when did she become this sort of like, I don't know, a jovial prankster? You know, like what was her whole thing here? You know,
we thought she was being recruited to the Death Riders.
I think they completely dropped that. And I know, like, she's the Willow thing is still ongoing. What was her thing here? She was trying to, like, come in here, trying to what, like, celebrate, like, jokingly celebrate what, women, girl power or something?
Yeah, girls uplifting each other. And Willow just said that they, and then maybe, she threw maybe paper? When you show loyalty, then you can talk to me.
And then she threw paper. Like, this felt like something you might, like, a scene you'd maybe see on like a backstage on a Ring of Honor DVD that was only meant to be seen by like 100 people and not a broadcast. Because I thought this was completely just bad.
Collision on Saturday night in Roanoke, Virginia, has Kyle Fletcher against Tomohiro Ishii for the TNT title. Is this the end of Ishii's career?
Probably not. I don't know why they wouldn't have. I guess Ishii's not there, so they couldn't really have shot an angle or anything, I would assume.
Triangle of Madness will take on Willow Nightingale, Ty Mello, and Queen Aminata. And Hangman Page and Jetspeed will take on Rush, Dralístico, and Beast Mortos, which sounds like that. This looks like a very good lineup so far.
It's this is Virginia?
Yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Page in Virginia. Yeah. Yes.
And then next week on Dynamite, they've announced Copeland against Stokely Hathaway and John Moxley against Kevin Knight. No announcement yet of the finals of the Eliminator Tournament.
Right.
And then MJF and Mark Briscoe closes the show. MJF is evading him, going into the crowd, and then there would be several attempts at the Froggy Bow, and each time MJF would roll out of the ring. So they just kept teasing it and teasing it to try and maximize when Mark would finally hit it. MJF brought a table out. He would use a Boston Crab, but Mark reverses out of that. And somewhere in here, he got kicked in the mouth. And dude, he had a lot of blood in his mouth. It was like, I thought this guy had maybe like lost a tooth. So he fights on the turnbuckle, finally lands the Froggy Bow, but he can't capitalize immediately. And so it's a delayed cover. Then Briscoe is put onto he puts MJF on the table, goes for the Froggy Bow, misses, and he crashes through the table. And they do this great count out tease where it's like 8 and Mark stumbles backward and then just makes it up to the apron at 9 into a heat seeker. And then Bryce counts 3, but he has his back turned and doesn't see Mark put his foot on the rope and calls for the bell. And there is no instant replay, obviously, even in the state of Ohio. And Bryce blew it.
He blew it. I guess they wanted an out to protect Mark Briscoe. Didn't really love this finish, honestly. It just feels like a real cop out. But
do you see this being a three-way, or do you think that this was just a way to get to MJF and give Briscoe an out?
I could. But at this point, you've kind of promised MJF versus Page, which is the bigger match. I don't know if, like, you know, the sudden addition of a Mark Briscoe, unless they do it with great storytelling, would receive. It'd probably receive a good reaction. But I do have to say Page versus MJF on its own feels like it's already bigger. So I don't know if they would. I'm very curious to see, like, how Mark Briscoe changes as a result of this. I mean, he's trying to be a more serious character. He's trying to be more angry and aggressive. And this will only make him more angry and aggressive. At the same time, I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss a certain aspect of his funny personality, you know, that I think gave him appeal to the crowd. Obviously you want somebody to be taken seriously and you don't just want him to be the comedic figure, but it's a fine line because then you might risk being a little too dry and not, charismatic enough. So I'm kind of curious to see where they take him. What did you think about the match?
I thought it was all right. it didn't feel like it was the most heated in comparison to like the tag match, for instance, or I thought they had like their moments in the match. The crowd popped for the table spot and such. I wasn't crazy about the finish either. I think that was kind of a underwhelming finish with just like Bryce, you know, kind of missing it. It's like, the heat was more on Bryce than it was on MJF for sneaking the win away. And then afterward, MJF continued to attack him. Hangman comes out, and they just had a long pull-apart brawl. And eventually, Page took out the security and teased the buckshot lariat, but MJF wandered off. And that's how the show ended.
Yeah, I didn't find myself connecting to the match as much as I thought I would either. And I wonder if that's because at this point, the feud to me has kind of felt like it's somewhat cooled down because we're already focused on MJF and Page so much. But Page versus MJF feels like it's a headlining bout, but it's kind of got an asterisk to it because you know he's not going to win the championship because he's got the briefcase, or sorry, the contract, right? So the question is whether or not he will use the contract at Forbidden Door or after.
What'd you think of Dynamite overall?
I'll be honest, like I really enjoy those Aragon Ballroom shows, but I was really happy to get out of that setting and into a bigger arena because I thought it ultimately made the show feel bigger. So I enjoyed the setting. I thought it was a good Dynamite. You know, like the in-ring content is always of a high quality. Mox versus Bayley, the tag team match certainly. And you know, I think you can always see, after watching as much WWE programming as we have, if you're strictly a fan of like belt-to-belt in-ring action, like Dynamite is probably, it's still the best show, you know, on a consistent level. So I thought it presented that. Forbidden Door feels like it feels a bit weird, honestly, like to build to, because
the only match I'm really feeling at the moment is Okada Swerve. I think they're doing a pretty good job building that up to feel like a special match. You know, you're going to have
there's just a lot of like extra components from other promotions that you are anticipating that they've not hinted towards at all, other than the Mercedes match, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got the four-way match, the tag title match, which we don't have the challengers till the tournament ends. Tony Storm and Athena's been pretty,
yes,
well done. And then, yeah, you presume, Hangman and MJF, Moxley and Darby. Like, it's shaping up to look like a very good show, but I wouldn't say it's...
But we're missing Ospreay. We're missing Kenny. We anticipate Ospreay being involved, but we don't know in what capacity yet. Same, are we expecting Kenny or no?
I mean, I would think he would be on that card. But
yeah, I would think so too. Yeah. So, how many weeks are we away?
It's only like 2.5 weeks away.
Okay.
It's the 24th. So that's not too much. We got two more Dynamites until the show.
So I have to think we'd get a pretty full card by next week, don't you think?
Yeah. And then that 20th, that's the first week where, like post G1, where if there's anyone that's going to be flown over, and that show is...
That's the go-home show.
It's a go-home show, and it's in Scotland. So hopefully you're going to have a pretty hot crowd for an international edition of Dynamite. But that's the earliest you're going to get any of the New Japan people showing up. And like, it's like, you're not getting any teases of like, you know, CMLL.
This essentially
stuff.
Just feels like another AEW pay-per-view.
It is. Like, all the major matches are going to be those. I mean, you've right. pretty much got all your main players on the show locked up with programs aside from Ospreay and Omega at this point, and I guess like the Young Bucks. So there you go, everyone. That is our review of Dynamite, and we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel. And of course, we are getting close to 30,000 subscribers, so if you could just hit that button and we start all over again.
Yeah, we're only, what, 9,950 away?
It all starts with one. It all starts with one, okay?
Hey, just a quick plug for the XL edition of this particular podcast. We had an extra large edition of our show because we spent about 50 minutes prior to this. So if you guys are looking for more, talking about WWE PLEs moving to ESPN in the U.S., big, big, big news story that will have a lot of ramifications to a lot of people watching these shows. Obviously, TKO Q2 earnings reports and notes from John Pollock here spoke a little bit about Hulk Hogan and Brooke Hogan appearing on the Bubble of the Love Sponge show. John and I spent a lot of time talking about this very, very compelling appearance that Brooke Hogan made on Bubble of the Love Sponge. So do check that out in the Cafe edition.
We appreciate it, as always.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.